Chris Johnson here. Thank you so much for joining me for the audio version of the instructions for Serendipity. This is an experiment. I've never done this before. I've never recorded audio instructions for a magic trick, but I thought it might be interesting. I'm a big believer in learning things in multiple fashions. I'm a big visual learner. My preferred way of learning intricate sleight of hand and detailed techniques for performing is visual through video. I know a lot of armchair experts prefer reading, and I enjoy reading too. I read every day, and I enjoy reading more for, in terms of magic, more for the theory and the psychology of it and everything. But I personally really dislike reading in terms of trying to learn sleight of hand, because if the author did not write it descriptively enough, then I really struggle with it. But as you'll soon see, if you're jumping to this MP3 first, you'll soon see that Serendipity is extremely easy to do, and having an MP3 format is certainly a viable option. Kit is accessible to you when you bought this as possible, which is why there's a collection of videos and also a very detailed manuscript as well. So look at this as another ancillary way to learn the material. And I never would have thought that having an MP3 for a trick would have been interest to people from me. But the podcast now, the Professional Magician podcast, that people in over 50 countries listen to every week. So apparently people aren't sick of my voice yet. So let's get into the effect. And again, I'm going to this with a standpoint that you can start with this MP3 and have virtually all the information that you need. I say virtually because there's a couple of things. You're going to want to refer to the PDF and the videos for the actual drawing, so you know how to make the drawings in advance. But let's get to the effect. Here is what the audience sees. I go up to the audience, and I usually use this near the end of my show. I've used it as a closer before, and it plays wonderfully. So by this point in the show, they've got not quite well. So the audience has been seeing a lot of really wonderful things, and we've had a lot of fun together. And I say, for my next demonstration, we're going to do an experiment in serendipity about coincidence, about these weird connections which seem unexplainable. And I say, we need people in the audience to come up with suggestions of things that could possibly be drawn, you know, like bicycle, house, whatever. So I then proceed to ask an audience volunteer to pass out a collection of slips in golf pencils to maybe like a dozen or so spectators, 10 or 12 or so. I then call on two volunteers from the audience. One I designate is going to be the sender. One is going to be the receiver. And I tell the receiver she's going to be the one who's going to receive, hopefully, a thought or an impression from. And I tell the receiver that it may seem to come in the form of intuition, or it may not seem to come from anything at all. You may not even realize what you're doing. So what we're going to do, an experiment, association. And on stage, near the two volunteers, are two easels with large sketch pads on them. I currently use 18 by 24 inch sketch pads, because I'm usually in front of 200 to 500 people at a time. So I walk the receiver volunteer over to one of the sketch pads. And I say, in a moment, you're just going to scribble on a sketch pad like this. And I take a large Sharpie marker out of my pocket, and I just scribble scrabble all over the page. You know, just scribble. And again, I've got examples in the video and the written material. You can see exactly what it should look like if you don't. And so she understands what's going on. And I said, we're going to blindfold you in a second to prevent anybody from thinking that you're peeking at anything that was written or any hints from the audience. And also to allow you to concentrate better. This will work really well that way. Then I go into the audience and I collect all the slips of paper into a 6x9 envelope, 6 inches by 9 inches. The golf pencils I leave, because they're just golf pencils, they're not gimmicked. Bring the envelope to the stage again, go to the sender, the one that's going to be sending the thought, and have her reach inside the envelope without looking and take out one of the folded slips, they're billets. And lo and behold, she takes one, holds it in her hand. And I say, keep a cup in your hand. I don't want anybody to see it. I certainly don't want the receiver to see it. I bring the receiver over to the easel, not facing the audience. Take the other easel, turn it around, not facing the audience. Who is holding the billet to open it up and read it. I ask her, is it something you can draw? She says, yes. Have her walk behind the easel, hand her a marker. And I do a 3-2-1 countdown, and when I do, the receiver is going to begin scribbling all over the page like we talked about, and the sender is going to draw her drawing. So I do that, 3-2-1, they draw. Bring the lady back out from behind the easel. The blindfolded lady, I turn her easel away and allow her to unblindfold herself. Ask the lady who was the sender, what did you draw? And she said, my slip said a Christmas tree. Excuse me. Turn her easel around, and of course it's her rendition of a Christmas tree. Go over to the lady who was blindfolded, the receiver. And oh, and I forgot to mention this too, that before I turn the easels around, I ask both the ladies to sign their names at the bottom of the pad too. So both drawings have signatures at the bottom. So I turn the drawing around that the lady who's blindfolded, the receiver, scribbled. And it's not a match for the Christmas tree, not an exact match, but her scribbling patterns all over the page, it looks very much like an impressionistic ideal of a Christmas tree complete with a topper at the top of the Christmas tree. A miracle. No impression devices, no pre-show, no electronics, no cueing of the spectator, no instant staging, nothing like that. In fact, the way that I just described to you, you can do it without going to a magic store or website at all. So, here is the big secret. Basically, the drawing that the lady makes is forced. The slip of paper that the sender reaches inside the envelope and removes that is also forced. The envelope has a partition in it, you know, a fake wall, and on one side is empty, and then we're allowed to collect the legitimate billets from the other. The other side of the envelope has my folded and all 12 of them say Christmas tree, written in the same golf pencil style that the other slips will be written in. The drawing, the actual scribbled drawing, is two sheets down from the pad. So when I scribble scrabble all over the pad, I turn the easel toward the back of the room so nobody can see it. Have the blindfolded person stand behind the easel, blindfolder, hand her the marker, and I'm handing her a dead marker, a marker with no ink in it. You know, I do a very simple switch from when I showed her how to scribble. And then from that point, I switch it for a dead marker with no ink in it. And then before I have her scribble, I go, oh, I forgot. Let me give you a fresh sheet of paper. So I tear the paper off, revealing her drawing of the pre-drawn Christmas tree underneath. And so that sequence of drawing the drawing, the scribbling that I demonstrate, and then me tearing off the piece of paper, it completely motivates it because we're doing this experiment of free association. And then I seem to forget, and I tear the paper off, feeling my pre-drawn Christmas tree. And the key, I think what makes this routine so strong is that a couple of subtleties. Well, number one, I'm scribbling all over the pads. I'm showing her how to draw. If I just had her draw any way that she wanted to, she might draw circles, she might draw straight lines. So I demonstrate how I want her to just scribble scrabble all over the page. So her physical motions, when you look at the Christmas tree later on, it will look like something that she could have theoretically have drawn when she was scribbling in the fashion that I demonstrated to her. So therefore, the likelihood of the person who's blindfolded being in on it is very, 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 very low. And then the subtlety of the signatures at the bottom, that was a picture that I switch out the dead marker, switch in and have her sign her name at the bottom, and then I have them both turn around, and we show that everything is not an exact match, but the scribble scrabble drawing that she made is it's like a Rorschach test. It's impressionistic, and is vaguely enough like a Christmas tree to be considered a bona fide hit. This plays extremely strong. Now I'll get into the history of it a little bit about why I designed this the way that I did, and my inspirations from this, and then we'll get into other sections such as the materials that you need and some other finer points too. Excuse me. So my inspiration from this, it goes back to, and I don't have the entire history of the dead marker. I saw it first in a children's effect where you pretended to draw on a piece of cardboard. And it had like these two drawings that matched, and he flipped it around, and I can't even remember how to describe it. And it was a pretty cute effect. And so I first became aware of a dead marker with that. And then years later, I read a book from Penn and Teller. I believe it was called Penn and Teller, How to Play in Traffic. I think that was the title of it. And I unfortunately lost the book. I wish I still had it, because it was a great book. And they described in that book I don't remember all the details, but it was a mind reading effect where the spectator would hold the drawing pad parallel to the floor, and then hold a marker underneath it, pointing upwards toward the ceiling, and kind of scribble scrabble, and then their drawing will look vaguely enough like a drawing or a word that somebody else has selected earlier. And it was the same basic concept, where there was a sheet of paper, tore it off, and then there's a pre-drawn, again, like a word that was written backwards. I forget all the details, but I didn't like their handling of holding it parallel to the floor and then putting the marker up toward the sky and writing underneath. It just seemed very something. so I liked the idea of it a great deal. You know, the concept of the dead marker to show that the spectator apparently, you know, drew something from the ether, you know, and I really liked that a lot, but I just didn't like their handling. So I put it in my notes and I sat on it for, you know, the better part of 20 years. So around 2003, I think it was 2003, I could be wrong about this, my recollection of time is minimal. I became aware in Magic Magazine of an effect called Simpatico, released by Brian Brushwood. And it was, I really love the idea of a spectator reading the mind of another spectator. To me, that's just a great effect in mentalism. And doing it with drawings, it makes it visual. So much of mentalism is not visual, so it was great. So Brian's routine, it had, again, two easels, and the blindfolded spectator, and they also had the spectator with a box on their head for an isolation chamber. And I didn't like that. I thought that was kind of making fun of the spectator, but whatever. And had that in my head for a long time, and I'd heard rumblings in the magic industry about how that effect worked, and I wasn't terribly enamored with the method. I just kind of let it go. And then I'm recording this in 2003, and about a year ago, 2002, I bought Brian Brushwood's Penguin Lecture. And he explains the exact workings of Simpatico on that lecture for $29, explains exactly how it works, and says, you know, by the way, if you want to buy all the stuff, you can get it on my website. And by this point, I knew enough about Brian's method, even before I got the lecture, that I really wasn't enamored with the method. But after seeing the lecture, and I had already had a few ideas of how to do this effect without his method. And I wanted to do right by the creators. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to buy the thing. So I got the thing in the mail, and I'm not going to get into the methodology here, but you basically get three main components with it. You get an electronic component with it, and you get two other non-electronic but gimmick components with it. And all three of the components were inoperable. You know, the quality is really poor. You literally could not do the effect with what came in the box, and I was really upset about this. And I told you know, the tech support from Brian's site, I said, this is terrible, here's why. And they said, regarding the electronic component, they're like, well, maybe it's your computer. I'm like, I have a brand new computer, it's not my computer. Well, what had happened is they had upgraded, the electronic component is an off-the-shelf item. They upgraded it, and so the item that came in the box did not match the instructions they gave in the instructions. So I had no idea how to work this thing. And I finally figured it out and was able to get it to work, but because of physical characteristics of this, it would not work with the other two components that came in the box. So it was completely inoperable. So I would have had to, if I wanted to use Brian's method, I would have had to have rebuilt this from the ground up. And I was like, you know what, screw it. I'm going to do my own method. And that's what you have here today. I wanted something reliable, something that was not going to fail. I know the concept of the dead marker. It goes back long before Penn and Teller, long before that children's magic trick that I can't remember the name of. And I believe the children's magic trick, I came across the idea of the dead marker was a Samuel Patrick Smith trick, I believe. Something with animals, I think. I really can't remember. Maybe it's a Christmas one. But I know it goes back further than that. But you know, suffice to say, the overall method is hardly unique with me. I simply wanted to do a routine on stage with one person reading the mind of the other. Brian's method of having the object to be drawn selected used a deck of cards, a jumbo deck of cards, with suggestions on them. And that's all that I'm going to say. And his deck of cards would not work either. The gimmick for that was completely failed. Cody Fisher. So that's the inspiration for Serendipity, where it came from. originally was going to do another, a different gimmick deck to force the Christmas tree. And then I spoke to Cody Fisher about this and told him what I was planning. He goes, oh, why don't you have somebody, you know, people in the audience write drawings? So now it seems really impossible. As opposed to me standing there with a deck of cards that I pre-drawn, why not have somebody in the audience, you know, different people in the audience do suggested drawings? And I thought that was brilliant. I thought that was just a fantastic addition by Cody Fisher. And doing a simple switch was fantastic too, so that I had my four spillets. It all just came together really nicely. Put this in front of audiences. I've done this for adult groups. I've done this for middle school kids in school. And people just flip out for it. I mean, if you watch the live shows, the ladies group I did it for, and then the middle school, the ladies group, the people just flipped out. I should have closed it. I didn't close it. I should have. The middle school, as I'm turning around the easel, you can hear kids say, no way, and things like that. For a middle school audience to be that impressed was very cool. And then after that show was over, I had a chance to, in the hallways with the teachers, to talk to some of the middle school kids and ask them their thoughts on the drawing. And they're like, that was amazing. I have no idea how you did it. So do not let the simplicity of the method dissuade you from performing this for live audiences. It works really well. So now let's get into some of the materials you're going to need to do Serendipity. You're going to need two large sketch pads. And when I do this, I like to go as big as possible. So I do 18 by 24 sketch pads. You know, for all of you Kevin James Bolorama aficionados listening to this, sketch pad that Kevin James uses. But I do not recommend a newsprint-based sketch pad for this, because your marker, I recommend a really thick Sharpie marker so that the lines are visible to the audience. But with a newsprint sketch pad, you're gonna have a lot of bleed through. So I get and I don't have a brand name in front of me right now as I'm recording this, but I'll have links to this in the manuscript, you know, online where you can get this. I use the sketch pads that have the thickest paper possible. I just went to Michael's and I just went through a bunch of sketch pads and I just felt the paper and I just went for the ones that had the heaviest weight possible. And even with the heaviest weight paper possible for sketch pads, I found that with really thick Sharpies, there's a bit of a bleed through in terms of being able to see the drawing from the force drawing from underneath. So we'll cover that as we get into the setup. So you need two of those sketch pads. You also need two easels. The easels that I use are around $20 each, and again, they're available online. There'll be links in the manuscript, and I talk about them on the videos. And they're the kind that fold up very small, so they can fit in. If you have a Leffler table, they can fit in there. I'm not sure if they might fit into a briefcase. I don't know. I don't have a case yet. So you need a couple of but you don't have to use that style either. There's multiple styles of easels or standing in the show. Adds to the easels, because you're going to be moving the easels around on stage, turning them toward the audience and back away from the audience, that sort of thing. So you want to have the duct tape so you can secure them at the show, so that when you move them around, they're not falling off the easel and making you look foolish. To do it the way that I do it, you're also going to need two 6x9 envelopes. You can use a bigger envelope if you like. For me, 6x9 is just fine. You need two of them. You need one for the envelope itself and one to cut and make a partition, so you have a double, a double compartment envelope. I forget the name of what you call that thing. You're also going to need some 3x5 index cards for your billets. You're going to have 10 to 12 force billets, which are the 3x5 index cards cut in half and folded two ways. And you're also going to need a collection of golf pencils. And you're also going to need a blindfold as well. The blindfold that I recommend is one that just has like an elastic band to it, and you can hand it to the person, they can slip it on themselves. In the videos that I did, I used the actual blindfold from Serendipity, where I had to tie it behind the person's neck, and I quit doing that after those videos were shot, because as I was tying it to people's heads, ladies with long hair, I was kind of tangling their hair a little bit. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to get a different blindfold. That's one more reason I don't care for Brian's method. So that's and then you also need some Sharpies too. You need three Sharpies. Two are going to be legitimate, and one is going to be your dead Sharpie. So that is basically it. You don't need a lot for this. You have very minimal props involved, and let's get now into the setup. Setup is very easy. One of the sketch pads is completely unprepared. The other one, you're going to go through three sheets of paper every time. So what you do is you take the top two sheets of paper, and I do it from the left side. So if I'm facing the sketch pad, the open side, I reach down to the left-hand corner, and I lift up the corners of the top two sheets of paper, and I dog-ear them so that if I want to, I can just very easily reach down, grab those dog-eared ends, and tear off the two sheets as one. To make this even easier and to kind of prevent audiences from seeing that you're tearing off two sheets of paper, I also take some clear double-sided tape. You could use a glue stick, I guess, if you wanted to. And I put several strips of this double-sided tape between these two top layers of paper so that they are secured together. So then I then do the dog ear I talked about at the bottom so that during the show I can very easily reach down, grab that corner, tear off the paper, and expose the pre-drawn drawing underneath. So underneath these two pieces of paper that are dog-eared and taped together, I prepare my Christmas tree drawing. The reason why I did a Christmas tree is that when you see the video and you see the drawings in the manuscript, it lends itself very well to this kind of free association, random, hectic, chaotic scribbling method to allow you to create a Christmas tree. I've not yet experimented with other kinds of drawings. I'm sure, I mean, off the top of my head, you could probably do a house in this fashion. I don't know if you could do, maybe you could do a car, I don't know. You know, maybe a palm tree, but play around with it. If you don't want to use a Christmas tree, play around with it and see what kind of drawing lends itself to making this scribbling impressionistic thing that if they look at it, it looks like nothing. But if they compare it to an actual drawing or somebody says Christmas tree, they look at it and go, oh, Christmas tree. Because if you look at mine, it's a series of scribbles, and then there's kind of a square of scribbles at the bottom, and then there's like a random, you know, series of circles at the top to kind of suggest a Christmas tree topper. It's not an elegant drawing. It's not intended to be. So that's how you prepare that pad. Then what you do is you take one of your 2 6x9 envelopes, and I just cut I cut the envelope along the perimeter so that I've got two walls, basically, one with a flap, one without. And because I cut it along the perimeter, I've cut off maybe like a 1/16 or an 1/8 of an inch of the thickness of the envelope along the edges. That way, the envelope is one of the walls of the envelope, I take the non-flap end, the non-flap wall, and it is slightly thinner than the interior of the unprepared envelope. So because it's thinner, it allows me to slide in that panel, and then voila, I've got a double-sided envelope. The rest of the preparation involves taking six of these 3x5 cards and then cut them right in half. And then when you cut them in half, you'll then have a series of 12 index cards, smaller index cards, billet size, that are 3.5 by 2.5 because you've cut them in half along the 5-inch along, you know, lengthwise. Take those 12 smaller cards, fold each one of them in half one way and then the other way. So you've created some billets. Open up each billet, take one of your golf pencils, and on each billet, write down Christmas tree. Fold up these 12 billets and drop them into one side of your double-sided envelope. So now that's prepared. Take another set of six 3x5 index cards, cut them in half again, take each one of these half cards and fold them twice one way so you've got a series of unprepared pre-folded billets. And then you take with you 12 or so golf pencils. The unprepared billets and the 12 golf pencils, those are going to be the ones that get passed on in the audience. And that's it. That's your preparation to do before the show. When you get to the show, you set up your two easels. And then you take the sketch pad, put it on one of the easels, and then you take the duct tape and you tape the easel legs to the back of the sketch pad, so that it secures it in place. When you're moving these easels back and forth, you don't have to worry about the sketch pads falling off. You do this for both sketch pads, and I like to have both sketch pads open with a blank sheet of paper, you know, visible to the audience, facing the audience. And then you have your double-sided envelope with the billets inside your briefcase or your table. Have your blindfold, your three markers, and your unprepared billets and your golf pencils handy. When I do this kind of material, this kind of performing, I wear a jacket. In my left-hand jacket, I have one unprepared Sharpie, and I have the dry Sharpie. And to make sure the Sharpie is dry, I just let it sit out for a couple of days. And I found with these Sharpies that even if you leave it out for several days and then you cap it again, you uncap it, it'll kind of come back to life a little bit. So I pretty much leave mine uncapped all the time. And if I remember correctly, with dead Sharpies, I think you can also apply like a spot of glue to it to make sure it doesn't write and things like that. I don't bother. I just let the thing just sit and dry out, and I just use it that way. And I also want to mark this Sharpie too. So I take one of the unprepared Sharpies, and I just draw a ring around the barrel of the dry marker so I can look at an instant in my hand. I know exactly which one that it is. And it's not subtle. It's just you'll see it in the videos and the photographs and the manuscript. It's a circle right around the barrel on the marker. I do not want to have any doubts about which one I'm handing the spectator. It is unsubtle. Then in the my left-hand pocket, so I've got the two Sharpies, one dead and one that is live. In my right-hand pocket, I also have another live Sharpie. This is the one that's going to be switched out and given to the spectator who's blindfolded to sign her name at the end of the routine, which is a nice little throw-off to anybody watching who might be in the know. That's it. That's your preparation. So during the routine, when it's time to do the routine, I bring out the unprepared billets and the pencils. I have an audience member hand out the billets and pencils to save me a little bit of time so I can be working with the spectators on stage. It just kind of helps kill some of that dead time. And I first came across the idea of having the spectators pass out the billets by watching Danny Orleans' Performing Magic for Teens video. And he did a blindfold act. He had teachers pass out slips to the audience. And I thought, oh, that was marvelous. I always thought I had to pass out my stuff myself. So while the slips are being filled out, I'm giving them their instructions, items that could be drawn. Then I got my two volunteers up on stage, my sender, my receiver. The receiver is going to be receiving. The sender is going to take one of these slips of paper and concentrate and send that drawing to the receiver. I then reach into my left-hand pocket. I take out both Sharpies, the live one and the dead one. I uncap the live marker. I demonstrate to the receiver how she's going to scribble scrabble all over the easel after she's blindfolded. I then recap the marker, and I still have, I put both markers back into my pocket. I want the audience to get used to seeing me holding two markers in my hand. That makes the switch a lot easier. And there's no fancy sleight of hand to it. I just pretty much just do it. So both those markers go back in my pocket. And I suppose if you want a consistency, too, that you could go over to the other easel, hand the live marker to the person who's going to be the sender, and just draw a square and a circle and say your drawing is going to be a little bit more focused and deliberate, not so scribble-scrabble. But I usually don't do that, but it's an option for you if you want to be consistent by you're demonstrating both these people how to draw. After I make these explanations to the two ladies on stage with me, and I say ladies because I usually use ladies, I then go into the audience and with my side envelope, and I open up I have the folks in the audience drop their billets inside the envelope. Now, when you first bring out the envelope, it is a little bit bulky with all those billets in there already forced. I mean, but you've got it buckled open for people to drop it in. Trust me, nobody is going to notice. You're moving a lot. It's a relatively small envelope from stage. Just do it. Nobody's going to. And if you don't like the idea of having billets in the audience, I'll go over some alternate handlings later on in this audio. But just do it. Nobody's going to notice, hey, that envelope's awfully thick. No one cares. Just trust me on this. So I go into the audience and have them dump their billets inside, kind of shake them up a little bit as I'm heading back towards stage. And I'm bantering to the audience. I'm talking, making sure it's not a dead time of the show. And my bantering and my talking kind of distracts a little bit from any physical motions I'm doing. As I'm making my way back toward the stage and shaking up the envelope, I simply reach down inside the envelope with my fingers and I just kick forward the partition, closing down where the legitimate billets have been dumped and opening up the chamber where my force billets are. It's not even a move. I'm just reaching inside the envelope and just doing it. To the audience, it looks like you're just making sure the envelope is open. It's not a move. Don't think of it as a move. Then I have the person who's going to be the sender reach inside the envelope without looking, And this keeps her from digging around and, you know, that sort of thing. She reaches aside without looking, takes out one billet, and I have her cup it in her hand. I want you to hold that tight in your hand. I don't want to give anybody a chance to see it. And just in case, my receiver over here has super high-powered vision. We're going to keep you legitimate. We're going to blindfold you while you're drawing. And this also helps block out anything, allows you to focus and concentrate better, too. So she's holding on, the sender is holding on to the force billet that says Christmas tree. They all do. I turn the easel that has a scribble scrabble drawing on it, my demonstration drawing, if you will. I turn it so that the back of the easel is now facing the audience. I turn the other easel that has been so far untouched with its back toward the audience as well, so they both match. I guide the receiver to behind the easel with a scribble scrabble drawing on it. I hand her the blindfold, have her blindfold herself, make sure. I want to make this seem like an afterthought, like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about this. A little bit of acting involved. I ask the lady who is holding the slip of paper to look at it. Don't say it out loud what it is, but can you is this something you can draw? Is it legible? And she says, yes. I said, great, here's a marker. I reach inside my jacket pocket, my left side jacket pocket. I take the two markers out again. I give her the live marker, guide her behind the easels. And by the way, when you read the manuscript and you watch the videos, you'll see how I talk about angling the easels properly so that as the person who is sending is behind her easel, she can't look over and see the pre-drawn drawing. It's simply a matter of watching your sight lines when you're setting up your easels. It's not a big deal, but you'll see how I do it on the videos. I then go, okay, now on the count, I'm going to count from three down to one. When I do, you're both going to start drawing. Lady with a blindfold, you know, her name is Susan, whatever. You're just going to scribble, scrabble like we talked about. Helen, who's got the sender, you're going to draw your drawing deliberately. And then wait a minute, I'm sorry, Susan. I run over to, and I kind of mutter under my breath. Forgot to, let me tear off fresh piece of paper. I just kind of mutter under my breath. I don't even have a script for it. So I just kind of tear it off in the offbeat. Okay, and I walk away, you know, toss the papers on the floor and I walk away. And I take center stage again, put my back to them. 3, 2, 1 countdown. I'm going to give you both of you a chance to draw. They're drawing. They're doing their thing. I'll give them a few moments to draw. And then I look to the sender. I go, sender, are you ready? Have you finished your drawing? And when she says yes, I go, great, you can both stop drawing. I go over to the receiver, the one who's blindfolded. I take her marker from her. I take her marker from her, and I'm standing with my side. I'm facing her. She is facing the audience, even though she's behind the easel. I go over to her left side. I'm facing her, kind of perpendicular. So I'm profiled to the audience. My left side is closest to the audience. So my right side is downstage. So I take her marker from her in my right hand. I start to walk away, and as I start to walk away, I go, oh, you know what? Why don't you go ahead and take the marker back and sign your name at the bottom of the drawing? And when I'm saying this, I'm reaching into my right-hand pocket, switching out the dead marker for the third marker, the live marker, hand it to her. And because I'm downstage, when I'm doing this, it really goes beyond. I mean, nobody really notices I'm reaching into my pocket. And once again, it's kind of like an afterthought, like, oh, why don't you sign your marker? And then as she's signing with the live marker, as she's signing it blindfolded, I then turn to the sender. I go, would you sign your name? I collect both markers. I take the lady who's blindfolded, I take her easel, and I kind of move it off to one side, further down, further to the right side of the stage, away from her. I used to guide her while blindfolded from behind the easel, and I realized that's just way too awkward physically, so I don't do that anymore. I move the easel, and I allow her to unblindfold herself. I don't want her to unblindfold herself and see the drawing too quickly, because I want her reaction to go along with the audience. I mean, I suppose I can have her see the tree that she supposedly drew, and then when the sender says Christmas tree, oh my goodness, and then she's going to react, and that's... When you look at my videos and you see the show I did for the ladies group, you'll see that's what happened. That the way I did and I'll explain why I did that blocking the way that I did later. It was just some limitations on where I was working that day. So you saw her react first before everybody got a chance to see her drawing, which kind of sort of blew the ending a little bit. But the reactions were still off the charts. But my preferred way to do it is have both drawings revealed at the same time so that the receiver sees her drawing the same time as the audience and everybody reacts together. I suppose there's something to be said by giving the receiver the chance to react first and then the audience see it second, so you basically get two reactions. So I guess there's something to be said about that. I prefer it this way, where there's like this wonderful unveiling where both the ladies are center stage. I turn around the Christmas tree drawing that the sender drew, and then I turn around the receiver's drawing. They see the scribble scrabble and it looks impressionistic, like a Christmas tree. And everybody loses their minds. And if anybody cares to, they can examine the easels and the marker. The dead marker is already hidden away. And so you're clean. And it's reliable and it's easy and it's simple. So now let's move on to, I'm going to talk briefly about why, when you look at the two live performances, the middle school one is probably the better of the two in terms of blocking, because I had a nice stage to work with. So in terms of blocking, everything worked out pretty much the way that I did. The only thing I would change about that, again, is the fact that I led the lady while still blindfolded from behind the easel. And that was just really awkward. I don't do that anymore. And I also, again, like I said, I eliminated the Brian Brushwood's, I was using his blindfold to take away her eyesight. Even though it's a gimmick blindfold, I use it in an ungimmicked fashion. But I don't do that anymore because, again, with ladies with long hair, or men with long hair, or anybody with long hair, it is easy to kind of tangle their hair while you're tying the blindfold behind them. So I now use just like a regular, like a sleeping mask kind of thing. And again, there's links to that in the manuscript as well. The other show with the ladies group, the way that I did that reveal, as you'll see, I had the lady who was the sender with her easel facing the audience the entire time. You couldn't see it, but to the right and slightly behind the lady who was drawing the legitimate drawing was a couple of tables of ladies. When I got to the venue, I performed at this venue maybe three other times before, so I knew the layout. But when I got there, for some reason, they had a couple of tables of ladies back toward the back of the stage. And so my blocking is really, really tough. I didn't have room to do the easels how I usually wanted to do them. And when I talked to the event coordinator, I said, can we have these ladies sit elsewhere? And they're like, no. And she was really kind of off-put that I would dare ask such a thing. So I changed my blocking a little bit. I had the easel with a sender facing the audience. I had the receiver draw her drawing first. And I didn't have the sender draw her drawing until after the receiver finished hers, because I did not want anybody to mutter Christmas tree while they saw the sender drawing her drawing. So I did it out of order like that. The receiver drew her drawing first, then the sender drew hers, and then I said Christmas tree, and then the receiver saw her drawing, she reacted. It still worked. I mean, you can hear the reactions, you can see the reactions. Everybody lost their freaking mind. But I had to change the blocking because of the way the venue was set up. I wasn't very happy about it, but I included that particular performance. You could see, even when faced challenges like that, even when I did things how I normally don't do them, it still gets a powerful, powerful, powerful reaction. Like I said, but in terms of blocking, the middle school show, that's typically how I do it. And let me tell you get a reaction like that out of middle schools, you're doing really well, because middle schools, in my personal experience, are probably the most discerning audience, the hardest to please. You got kid shows, you can do silk hankies for kid shows, and bunny puppets and square circles, and that's wonderful. When I work for adults, I typically do all mentalism. High schools, all mentalism, maybe hypnosis. Middle schools, like this weird midgrain, this middle ground where they don't like straight magic. Like if you pull out a change bag and silk handkerchiefs for a middle school audience, they will hate you. But conversely, doing a lot of hardcore mentalism, they're not going to follow it. They don't have the attention span for it. So you have to have. And because this is so stinking visual, you saw the reaction, you heard the reaction, everybody reacted really well to it. And when I did that particular performance, I did have an educational message tied to it. A very simple one, just about asking asking your teachers and the trusted adults in your life for help when you need it. It's a fairly generic message that I give for almost all of my shows. I come up with a reason to get a teacher on stage, and I tell the kids how to get your teacher on stage by asking. If you need extra help, just ask. And I expand upon that. And it's a wonderful educational concept you can put into any school show if you're a school show performer listening to this. So that's a little bit of a free thing for you, too. Okay, so that's basically everything I had to say about the routine, the setup, the influences, a little bit of my personal history with it, how I altered it for that one show you saw, and why I changed blindfolds and a few other items of random discussion. Now I want to get into some alternate ideas for performance. when I first started developing this routine, when I became, I don't want to say unenamored, but I'll just say when I became disgusted with Brian Brushwood's really shoddy equipment I received, I was working on other ways to do this. The first item I had to overcome was his really crappy gimmick deck of cards to force the Christmas tree. So I'm not going to reveal what his gimmick was, but it didn't work. It's a classic gimmick. If I said what it was, you've probably got something similar to it in your drawer. So I thought, okay, well, I can just do a one-way force deck. And so what I wrote up was I got some index cards, and I wrote down a bunch of random items to draw, like house, car, anger, chaos, whatever, on a series of index cards, you know, maybe like six or seven of them. And those would be the ones that I flashed to the audience. And then on top of that, about a dozen or so, I would write down a Christmas tree and a dozen or so index cards. So you show the face of the deck to the audience. It's got the random items on it. When it's time for the audience member to select one, you turn them face down, and you simply spread the top 12 cards, let them touch one, take the card, hold it against their chest, boom. You've easily forced the Christmas tree. That was my first idea, and quite frankly, if I'm ever in a situation where I don't want to take the time to go into the audience and have billets written on and everything, that's probably what I would do. I'd probably do what I just described, with basically a variant of a one-way force deck. But I vastly prefer the billets, because as Cody Fisher told me in our conversation about this, it adds another layer of impossibility, which I really like that a lot. So kudos to Cody for giving me that idea. The second way to force the Christmas tree, I learned from an old Doc Hilford book, and it's out of print. I'm not going to reveal the inner workings of the routine, except for one aspect of it. Doc would do, he did a routine where there was a series of billets and plot was that he was playing the role of an interrogator, and the spectator who had these three billets and this whole mind reading business going on was a prisoner, and Doc was interrogating him. And I didn't care for the methodology. The billet handling is way too complex for me, but the plot line is really cool. And at the end of the routine, Doc would trigger the person to jump to their feet at a serendipity, a very subtle trigger that Doc would give. And by jumping to their feet, Doc's scripting was such that when they jumped to their feet, the audience led to believe that the person is being electrocuted with psychic. He had a stack of cards. And he had some kind of like an arcane symbol or whatever, and a stack of cards, maybe business cards, wrapped with a rubber band. And on the face of the deck, on one of the cards, he would draw a symbol, show the symbol to the audience. This symbol will you know, allow the person to concentrate. I'm going to hypnotize him, whatever his presentation was. And then he would peel off this card off the face of the deck, and it was an out to lunch setup. So half the of the ones that were set up, he had a series of legitimate cards, and then he had a half card below the envelope, or I'm sorry, below the rubber band wrapped around the cards. So the symbol he drew was on one half of the face-up card. And then underneath the half card, if you're familiar with Out to Lunch, this makes sense to you, was a message that said, "When I touch my nose, jump to your feet, we'll have some fun." So he would show the face of the deck of these index cards with a rubber band around it to the audience, draw his little symbol on the top card, turn it away from the audience, peel off that top card with a symbol, exposing his hidden message underneath because of the out to lunch principle, show it to the audience member, and now the audience member was cued that whenever Doc would touch his nose, they jump to their feet. And now you have this wonderful thing where it looks like the audience member is tongue-in-cheek getting electrocuted. You know, nice little method. So I considered that method to cue my spectator to draw a Christmas tree. I was going to have it set up like that, you know, draw a symbol for them to concentrate on, and it would say, "You draw a Christmas tree, okay?" And I dismissed that because I did not want to do instant stooging. And if you're familiar with Brent, probably said too much. So I abandoned that method, but if you're comfortable with instant stooging, that too is a method you can do. You can do an out-to-lunch principle, have your message underneath, have them draw the Christmas tree. But again, I don't like that because people talk. And I work a lot in schools, and I guarantee if I was to do this with a student drawing it, they would tell their friends afterwards because they want to look superior. Maybe I could get away with it with a teacher, It would probably, in fact, I'm sure I could get away with it with a teacher, because a teacher likes to look good. But I just chose not to do that. I just don't care for that. I want my onstage participants to be in the dark and mystified as much as possible. But I include it as part of this audio as an option for you to consider. Other alterations to the routine to consider, I advertise this routine with no store-bought magic props whatsoever needed, which is true. You know, I've given you everything that I currently do the routine this way with everything I've described, with the billets and the envelope and the drawings and, you know, the dead marker. Oh, that's exactly how I do it in my live work. However, what I might do in the future is I might switch the billet switch from the envelope that I described to using David Regal's Crystal Billet Box. If you've seen this, I did a review for it on the podcast, and it's wonderful. As the name implies, it is a switching mechanism, and it's a clear box. It looks so fair. So people would dump their written billets into the Crystal Billet Box. And then you walk back up on stage, and then you do what David teaches you how to do, and you switched it. And the beauty of it is the person can reach inside the box, and everybody can see all the billets there. They can see the hand going inside. They can see the person picking up one billet, and they're picking up one of your force billets. So I will probably move to that in the future, simply because I like the clear aspect of it, and the thing works so stinking well. But my envelope method is how I did the routine, you know, ad nauseum for quite some time, and it works really well too. So just something for you to consider. You know, if you have another billet switching method, you can do that. I know there's a ton of billet switching boxes out there. If you want to pre-show it, you can. I suppose you could do a pre-show and have people draw drawings, and I don't know. There's a lot of different ways of handling this. All I know is that this sucker works. I recently shared the inner workings of this routine with Paul Romhaney, the editor and owner of Vanish Magazine. Paul and I have been friends for a long time, and we had a nerd session. We were just talking, like Paul, Paul was showing me what he's working on. I showed him what I was working on, and I couldn't do the routine for him because we were over Zoom, but I explained the routine for him, and he loved it. He was like really enamored with it, and he came up with a lot of mechanical ways to do the routine too. And he goes, but quite frankly, if I ever do the routine, I'm going to do your method because it is so stinking reliable. And he loved everything about it. So it was, having his endorsement from somebody with his creativity was really gratifying. It felt really good hearing him say that. In fact, he's going to have a review for it in Vanish. By the time you hear this, you'll have probably read the review. anyway, this has been a head for a very long time, years and years of development. It simply came down to coming up with some very basic concepts that I was familiar with, combining them in a really cool way, and allowing me to create a routine that it really looks like real mind reading. I think, and I want to say too, that as you're developing this for yourself, again, don't be beholden to the idea of a Christmas tree. I use a Christmas tree because that's what one of the options in Brian Brushwood's methodology. And when I was developing mine, and I came up with this idea of free association and scribble scrabble, I just very quickly drew a Christmas tree like I was scribbling, and it came out really well. I'm like, you know what? This works. Why bother switch? But don't be beholden to a Christmas tree. Experiment. See what else you can draw that looks enough like scribbling that somebody would believe themselves that they drew while they're scribbling, but would look like a recognizable object when shown to an audience and compared with another drawing. You know, experiment, have some fun with it. The other thing I'll comment on too is, and I'm not revealing anything because this is, you can see this on Brian Brushwood's demo videos. I'm not revealing anything. But when his blindfolded participant drew the Christmas tree, they drew a star at the top of the page, then they drew a large triangle below it, and they drew a square below it. And to me, that was too precise. You know, it just seemed too precise. Like, I'm not going to say it was too perfect because it didn't look exactly like a Christmas tree. And Brian had reasons why he did that. He outlined the psychology of it brilliantly in his Penguin Live lecture, which I did enjoy tremendously. But I just didn't like that. I didn't like it that the blindfolded person was drawing deliberate objects. It bumped up too close to the too perfect theory. And my own opinion about the too perfect theory is that most of the time I ignore it. I don't believe in the two-perfect theory. Like if somebody's doing a card trick, I don't believe that there's a two-perfect theory for that. But for something like this, where somebody's drawing and supposedly getting an impression from somebody else, I do think that if you turn the drawing around, the person who had was blindfolded had apparently drawn a perfect Christmas tree or a series of geometric shapes like Brian Smith, I do think that smacks of trickery, and it's too unbelievable. So whatever drawing you settle upon, I do highly, highly urge you to stick with the idea of a scribbling and not a precise drawing or even geometric shapes. Yeah, I think that's it. I think I've covered everything. And again, you know, for the placement of the easels on stage, you'll want to look at the video and read the manuscript where I talk about that more in depth to get an idea of what I do for the scribble drawing, both for my demonstration drawing and for the force drawing. You'll need to read the manuscript, look at those drawings, and watch the videos. It'll explain everything very clearly. I do think that doing the, and I suppose you could eliminate the demonstration of the scribble scrabble to start off with, if you want to save a little bit of time, but I wouldn't recommend it because two things are going on there. Number one, I'm demonstrating to the blindfolded person how I want them to scribble, so they've got that in their mind when they start scribbling. Without that demonstration, I feel I run the risk of the person, when they're scribbling, not really scribbling, maybe drawing like big arcing figure eights or, you know, straight lines and being very elegant and going slow, to really match my scribble scrabble Christmas tree, I really feel I have to demonstrate it. You're going to scribble like this. I'm drawing these very fast, chaotic lines so that if the person is blindfolded, if they do that as well, it seems, you know, because when they're blindfolded, they're disoriented. They don't know exactly what it is they're drawing. If they're just drawing randomly without thinking and going very, very quickly. So it makes it believable to them when their blindfold comes off that they could have drawn that scribble scrabble Christmas tree. I think that's very important. Secondly, I don't recommend eliminating that demonstration of the scribbling technique, is that it gives me motivation to tear off that piece of paper and the two pieces of paper and expose my tree, my pre-drawn Christmas tree. This routine really comes down to that one key moment. And my demonstration of this, which seems completely understandable and lockstep with the idea of this free association, it makes total sense. It makes that whole thing, when I run over right before they draw, oh, I forgot to, you know, tear off your fresh piece of paper. It motivates everything, and it makes everything, oh, that makes total sense. And then, of course, Cody Fisher's brilliant addition, switching out the dead marker and switching in the live one so they can sign their name at the bottom, which, you know, in the mind of anybody. In fact, when I was explaining this routine to Paul Romhaney, I was describing everything, and he goes, okay, when he described it to me, I was wondering what was happening because, you know, I was thinking dead marker, but then when they drew their thing at the bottom, you know, I was like, how do you do that? And I just said a simple switch. He's like, oh, brilliant. So this routine is psychologically very sound. It is motivated. It is easy to do. It's visual. You don't need any magic store props for it. I mean, what more can you ask? I know what I wanted to talk about. I've not done this yet, but I do not see any reason why you could not adapt this to a parlor situation. You could obviously use smaller sketch pads. I wonder about eliminating the easels, though. My original thought when I was putting this out, because I've never done this for parlor, I've only done this for stage audiences, because I'm on stage in front of, again, 200-400 people most of the time. You know, a small audience to me is, you know, like 50 people. I don't even do that. Unless I'm doing a library show, I don't do audiences that small very often. Anyway, so there's no reason you couldn't adapt this for parlor. And I've considered trying it for parlor for myself, eliminating the easels, and just having the person who's blindfolded kind of, you know, take the drawing pad and kind of balance it on their tummy while they're scribbling and everything. I don't know how that would work. If they'd be so disoriented, they might drop the easel. I don't know. That's something to consider and experiment with. If I ever offer this for parlor, I will probably, you know, maintain using the easels, or I just may save this for stage. I mean, there's so many, and again, when I'm performing for adults, I'm almost always doing mentalism. So if I'm doing a parlor show, it is usually going to be for adults. I'm usually doing mentalism. And honestly, I've got, you know, so many great mentalism routines that I enjoy that I've learned from other people that I probably wouldn't even bother doing this for parlor. But if you do this for Parler, you know, get smaller easels, get smaller sketch pads. Consider experimenting with having the person just hold the sketch pad, and let me know how it goes for you. Let me know if it works, if the person is able to do the scribble scrabble, you know, one handed essentially while holding the sketch pad. If it's not risky enough that they may accidentally flash the sketch pad, I don't know. Consider all that and let me know how it works for you. But either way, I want to thank you again for your purchase of Serendipity. I don't put out new magic very often. I'm not really a creator. I'm like a Lego guy. So when I release something like this, it's something that has been well thought out and finely honed. And so I know you're gonna, if you try this, I know you're going to love it. I was worried about putting this out because I knew a lot of mentalists and magicians might hear the secret, or might learn the secret and go, oh, it's just a dead marker and a billet switch. But the way that's put together with the motivation and the blocking and everything brings this to a whole new level. Trust me, this thing rocks. Try it out. Let me know of your successes. And if you have any questions about this, contact me. My contact information is all over the website. It's in the manuscript. And my email address is chrisjohnsoninfo@verizon.net. My first name is C-R-I-S, no H. So it's Chris Johnson Info, no H in Chris, chrisjohnsoninfo at verizon.net. Contact me, let me know of your success and any questions. Thanks so much for your purchase of Serendipity. I look forward to hearing from you soon.